active with the Boy Scouts.
Does he look like the picture on QSZ.com?
Yeah, yeah, close, close.
I think that picture is, of course, when he was already a bit up on age. Well, no. I guess the picture was taken. I don't think he, most likely, let's see this picture. It was 1960.
Now, I bet you that picture is much more recent. In fact, it says 2004. At 85, 2004 is what it says right on the picture.
Let's see. I got the date here. December. Here it is. December 1960.
Yeah, if you go to QSZ.com and don't go to the details section, you'll see a photograph with a story underneath, and the photograph says, this is Walt at 85 years of age in 2004.
Do you know who this individual is?
Yeah, we know him, if that's what you're asking.
We
know some potent people around here.
Got a bounty on him, too.
We're talking about Will Maxwell, W2DU. And looks like he's retired. He's enjoying his retirement in Florida, from what I can tell. Let's see, where were we? What was the last subject we were discussing? Barry or Mel? Barry first?
A quick question.
Yeah, go ahead.
I heard that if you take an HT and hold it horizontally and rotate it, you can determine what direction the signal's going to take.
I don't think that's the guy what his call is, his WB2HWW.
I don't think so. To direction find that way, very, very tough. Very, very tough. Direction finding with the handy-talkie is tough. Yeah, if you're real close and there's not a lot of building reflections around and you hold a hand around the right way, there are people who think they can direction find with that. But it's not clear. It's not simple. On top of that, you take, for instance, the purely vertically polarized signal from this station right now. When it arrives at my house in Huntington, because of the way it bounces off my tower and my house and whatever, in my particular bathroom, it is almost a purely horizontal signal. When I take the handy-talkie and lay it on the counter horizontal, I get beautiful reception when I'm listening in the morning. If I make it vertical, I get very poor reception. So you can move your handy-talkie around the room until you find what you think is a null. Then tilt it in various angles, and you find out that maybe it's a null for a vertically polarized signal, but not for a horizontal. The way the radio bounces around is a lot more complicated than first meets the eye. The example that I've given in the past is make-believe you've got a great big barrel full of perfect ping-pong balls, which means they bounce without losing any energy on any bounce. And you swing that barrel real fast so that they're bouncing all over inside your room. Believe it or not, the radio wave is doing all of that. It takes every possible bounce on every possible object, and all of those bounces, some kind of a composite signal, all those voltages add up at your particular antenna at that particular place, at that particular point in time. So the word multipath is an extreme understatement. Almost every situation where radio is taking place, there is multipath. And so for the people that are starting to use RFID tags, radio frequency identification tags, and they've previously been using a barcode scanner, where the barcode scanner has got that red laser beam coming out, and as long as you can make the laser beam touch the barcode, you can read it. And so there are times when the RFID tag is right in front of you, you've got a beautiful view of it, and you're not reading it very well. It's because the multipath just happens to add up to be a null at that particular location. Move a little bit, twist the reader in polarization, and all of a sudden you start getting reads again. So the difference on RFID propagation versus laser propagation is going to create a significant learning curve for people that are going to start using RFID. And it's going to be used a lot more as time goes on. That's a prediction. Anybody want to discuss any of the above? Give us your call letters right now, K2RIW.
Well, K2MLB is still here.
Glad to hear that. And so, have you solved the problem by now, Frank?
No, you gave me one good answer. Now I'm hoping for another one on the ground.
Yeah, when it comes to the ground plane radios, there is no free lunch.
No.
The antenna will work. you will get out with nothing but a ground rod. But you're going to be 15 dB weaker if you do it that way. You're going to be a healthy 2S unit down if you have nothing but a ground rod. And as you start laying down more and more radials, the guys you're talking to will get stronger and stronger in both directions. Your two choices when it comes to 80 meters is to either get the antenna far away from Earth or to make Earth act like it's not Earth. Make it into a mirror. And you lay down enough of ground plane radio so that out at the perimeter, all of the wires are less than 10 feet apart, maybe 5 feet, 8 feet, something in that order, that radio wave at 80 meters will think that that's a solid piece of copper. Just like the rungs of your tower it's not going to see. It thinks it's a steady 10-inch diameter thing. How about you, Frank?
Okay, well, this is what I'm... Well, okay, you keep saying mirror. I know the ground plane image and radio. So let me ask this. The clear space in my yard between trees, et cetera, is about 60 by 120. The tower is more or less in the middle. If I lay out radials, you know, conventionally in, say, four quadrants, and just say I put eight in each, just so to speak, in the north quadrant, I could have eight pieces of wire that would be somewhere between 30 and 40 feet long, maybe 45, as they fan out. The east and west would be eight in each quadrant that would be 60 to 70 feet long. So I would end up having, 16 radials, let's say 30 to 40 feet, and 16 radials 60 to 75 feet. That's the best I could do with radials. Now, if instead of that, and by the way, that comes to about 1,500 linear feet of wire. If instead of that I take my 60 by 120 foot backyard and lay a grid of just parallel wire, say every 2 feet, going northwest and east south, I could get 5,000 or 6,000 feet of wire in, but they wouldn't be radials and they wouldn't be related to the wavelength in terms of their length. But it would be like a grid of reflective wire. Would that work better?
My gut feel is the radial wires will work the best, even if they're not resonant. It's the best of all possible worlds. On 80 meters, you'd like every one of those wires to be something like 62 feet long, maybe a little bit shorter because of capacitance effects of the Earth. If all those wires were 62 feet long, you're going to get maximum performance out of them. Lay 30 or 40 of them down, your backyard's going to become perfect. As you use less wire in length, as you use less wire in number of radials, you start coming down in performance. But it's not a linear curve. In other words, as you start laying down radials, your performance starts coming up real fast. As you lay down more and more radials, you come up a little bit more slowly. You start curving over, so to speak. So don't be afraid of laying down radials that are less than the resonant length at 80 meters. You're still getting benefit out of them, even if they're not the full length. And out at the perimeter, should you bother coupling them together, it's not going to make a heck of a lot of difference. So the grid, the horizontal and vertical grid, which lays down a lot more copper, sounds like it would be better. But picture what's really happening, Frank. My example of what a counterpoise really does is the Arnold Schwarzenegger in space. Assume Arnold Schwarzenegger. Assume he weighs 200 pounds. He's floating free in the cargo bay of the space shuttle while it's in orbit. So he's weightless. He's holding onto a 200-pound barbell, and he's a 200-pound man. He pushes the barbell to the north at 2 feet per second. Action and reaction, he moves to the south, 2 feet per second. He's launched a current, a force, into that barbell to the north, and it responded on his body by moving him to the south. Now let's go to your ground plane antenna, assuming you were feeding your tower at the bottom, assume the tower was insulated from Earth. Assume you're launching 2 amperes of RF current into the bottom of the tower. Your feed line really brings the shack transmitter up to the tower. So if your transmitter was a 1 cubic foot box at the bottom of your tower, and you connected the 2 wires out of your transmitter, one to the tower and one to Earth, one to your ground planes, and if you're launching 2 amperes of current into the tower, you must be subtracting 2 amperes of current out of the ground. I mean, you think your transmitter is providing electrons. It is only a pump. just like Con Ed and Wilco, are only a pump. There isn't one single electron that Con Ed manufactures. For every electron that comes out of that one of the wires of that power station, the exact same number of electrons goes into the other end. It's only a pump. Your transmitter is a pump. But by action and reaction, you launch 2 amperes of positive current into your bottom of your tower. You are launching negative 2 amperes of current into the ground plane. And so now, that current into the ground plane, where is it going to go? If it flows on your radio wires, you're getting some benefit out of it. If it's got to go zigzagging to find the appropriate wires for your tic-tac-toe grid, it's going to work, but a little bit less efficiently. So once you see this action and reaction, and whatever current you launch into your bottom of your tower, you're launching the exact same amount of current into your ground plane. And now that may make it a little bit more clear for what's happening. K2 Mike Lima Bravo, K2LIW.
Yeah, K2RIW, K2MLB returning. Okay, well that does help, Dick, because you know, I've been going back to the very first, well let's put it this way, when somebody first talks about the image antenna, etc., and you know, even in the modeling programs, if you have a perfect ground, you have that perfectly reflective surface at the base of the antenna, and I was just thinking somehow that if the relationship to the wavelength was not significant, that more wire would, let's just say, provide a bigger area of reflective surface to the image antenna. I guess it just isn't going to work that way. All right, well, I'm glad I got the chance to sneak this in at the end, because maybe what I'll do first, with the weather coming and the ground getting soft, et cetera, first chance I get, I'm going to throw some wire in the ground. Back to you, Dave.
Yeah, there's another thing you can do. You're going to lay the wire on the ground. It's going to slowly sink in by itself. If you've got a real good relationship with your neighbor, and if the wire is small enough in gauge, and if you can snake it in between the lawn so it doesn't hang up his lawnmower, your neighbors may give you permission to lay the wire there also, across your property line into their property line, and maybe you stand a chance of making all these wires a quarter wave long or just a tiny bit less. It'll give you a little bit more benefit. It's not a showstopper if you can't do that, but if your relationship with your neighbor is as good as the one that Barry has with his neighbor has allowed him to, has given him permission to lay as much of his wire above ground or in the ground or even up in the air into the neighbor's property if he wanted to. If your relationship is really good with your neighbor, maybe they'll let you do that, Frank. Want to give it a try?
No, I have relatively new neighbors here on one side. Let me just say a couple of gals who immediately, people behind who were lovely people and were building a gazebo, she went to the town to complain, and then last winter she went down to complain to the Board of Health because the people have a German Shepherd living in a doghouse and she thought it was cruelty to animals.
Okay, that's a busy neighbor, I see it. And still, even though it doesn't sound good, it might be worth trying to establish a relationship with the person. What do you think?
Well, we're over the hump of them, of me getting into their hi-fi and that kind of stuff a long time ago, but now I'm just going to have to confine myself to my yard, and, you know, I'll do what I can, and we'll see. That's really what's dissuaded me from trying to do the vertical before, you know, the fact that I just don't have the room for an adequate ground system.
How we recognize. There's one other thing you can do here, Frank. Now that you know for every amp you launch into the bottom of the tower, if you were feeding the tower directly, I know you're feeding it through a gamma rod, but the phenomena is about the same. For every amp you launch into the tower, you're launching the exact opposite number of amps into your ground plane radio system. And the more radios you got, the better. If the radios are approximately a quarter wavelength long electrically, they work a little better. Therefore, I haven't really studied this one, but I got a strong feeling that in the directions, I mean, in one direction you've got a lot of property, 120 feet, in the other direction you've only got 60. If in the directions of the 60, you zigzag the wire, so that the wire is physically a quarter wavelength long, even though you're squeezing it into 60 feet of width of property, it is my belief you'll get a little bit more benefit by doing that. And worth a try. It's going to be kind of hard to confirm. Let's see what Howie's going to say about this.
Space 2L21.
LTY, we'll pick you up in a second. Howie first, go ahead.
We're talking about running a 20-meter inverted B with a 20-to-1 SWR. What type of transmission line were you using? And what do you consider real low loss? Were you running open or ladder line? Or did you use something like hard line? What were you using for that cable, Dick?
All right, now you're getting into the specifics. I was using, let me think now, about 60 feet of RG8U cable at the time. At 20 meters, RG8U, I'm guessing it has a couple of tenths of a dB of loss per 100 feet. I had 60 feet of it. Because of the 20-to-1 standing wave ratio, I may have had 1.5 dB of loss because the signal had to bounce back and forth quite often in the cable. But when I talked to the guy in South America, he still gave me an awful strong signal. This was back in the days when I was doing some HF work. I've done very little HF work since then. Back to you, Howie.
Yeah, I'm just curious, because I'm thinking about getting back on a low band. I just don't have the room for it, and I don't want to radiate in the house. Nah, I'm just curious. I look at the G5RB. A lot of Q-Souls about a lot of antennas. You got to use a lot of line, I think, if you got to have a high vis for. I don't know, would you only have a cable I could see, something like a good quality LMR 400 or 500. Maybe you'll get away with some really decent quality. Because when you start having a high vis for, I found out when I was a kid operating a low band, RG8U used to get hot. That cable used to get warm, Dick.
Yeah, but how many watts were you running, Howie?
5, 6, 700 watts.
I understand. You were running a lot of steam. I was running a barefoot HW101, which has, I guess on a good day, 110 watts of output. I certainly wasn't heating up the cable. Mr. LTY, give me your full call and name and then proceed with your question or comment, sir.
Yeah, it's KC2LTY. My name is Rich.
Go right ahead, Rich.
Alright. Listen, my question is, for a 10-meter antenna. If you could take a satellite photograph of my house and my surrounding area and look at what I have to work with, you'd understand that my problem. Because installing a dipole is not in the cards. I made a 6-meter dipole, and to set that up height-wise is not good, 20 feet. And I have a warehouse that runs east to west behind my house, which is 20 feet high, concrete wall, and then there's a steel roof on that, which goes to about 30 feet. And the 2-meter antenna, if I didn't raise that above 30 feet, I was in the hole. So what could I use for 10 meters as an antenna?
That roof, as bad as it sounds, is just a fatter version of the Wilco wiring. One of the examples that I've often used is that a 80-meter dipole made out of 14-gauge wire, at high noon, it casts a shadow on the ground of about 1 square foot. So the wire itself, 130 feet of wire, an 80-meter dipole, has a physical projected area of about 1 square foot. Radio-wise, it is 8,500 square feet. If your eyes operated at 80 meters and you looked at that dipole broadside, you would see a great big black elliptical area with a dipole going down the center of that ellipse, and it would be 8,500 square feet of area. The guy who sets up an 80-meter dipole on his property at, let's say, 50 feet in the air, and he looks at the Con Ed wiring or the local wiring directly in front of his house at exactly that altitude, he thinks to himself, hey, that metal of that wire, of that loco or Con Ed, is going to give me a blockage in that direction. You do a careful measurement in that direction, and you find out the signal is half a dB weaker. You've got 90-some-odd% efficiency in that area. The reason that dipole gives you 8,500 square feet of area is because it is resonant. It's the electronic resonance that creates that area. The Wilco or the Con Ed wire is not resonant. It only casts a shadow of 1 square foot or 3 square feet because it's got a wire. So 3 square feet of shadow from the wire in that direction when the signal is coming through the Con Ed wire and laying onto your dipole, and your dipole is 8,500 square feet, you can see it's creating very little percentage of shadow. Now, in your case, that roof of that warehouse is a lot bigger thing, but it isn't 8,500 square feet, and it's in projected area, and it isn't resonant. So on 80 meters, that roof is going to be almost transparent. I'll admit on 2 meters, that roof is a substantial blockage. On 80 meters, your signal is going to filter right around that and flow right through it. If you did a careful measurement in the direction of the warehouse propagation versus the opposite direction, I'd be amazed if you saw a 1 dB of difference, 1/6 of 1 S unit on a well-calibrated S meter. That's my belief, Rich. KC2LTY, K2RIW.
I think you passed it back to me, and I heard most of what you said, Rich, but that particular microphone cable sounds like it's failing. Tremendous rattling sounds were coming through on that transmission for the first time, as if the microphone cable has got a broken wire in it, or the microphone itself has a broken wire in it, is the way it was acting that time. So on your next transmission, wiggle the wires a little bit, tell us what you're doing, and we'll tell you which one it is. Yeah, on 10 meters, you got more of a problem. And I guess for you to put up a tower to climb above it is going to be difficult. I still think you shouldn't give up. Build an antenna on 10 meters, if that's the band you want, or 6 meters, and give it a try. You may be pleasantly surprised. RF has got some very fancy ways of getting around some pretty wicked obstacles. Yes, if you build a steel, six-sided building around your antenna, and it's closed off on all six sides with all the joints well-soldered or welded together, yes, you're not going to radiate. But as bad as that warehouse sounds, I would still give it a go. You think it's too discouraging a project to even start building the antenna. I would give it a try. And there's a 50-50 chance that you're going to be pleasantly surprised. KC2LTY, tell us which portion of the mic or mic cord you're touching. K2LIW in the tech net.
Alright. Is that better?
No problem that time. What did you change?
I gotta fold the mic wire to the back of the mic. It's the wire, I know that. It's an ICOM 2100. And I know I need a new cord. But would I be better off putting up a vertical antenna would be much easier for me to do.
And you're sort of asking me, is the roof of that warehouse going to affect you more for vertical than horizontal? And that's not clear. And if for a bunch of reasons it's easier for you to put up a vertical, give it a try. And even consider, in the case of 10 meters, where the halfway dipole is only 16 feet long, there may be a way in a tree or alongside of a building you can hang a vertically polarized dipole. But I think about a dipole is it's a symmetric antenna. Does not require ground plane radials. The materials are cheap. To hang a vertically polarized dipole somewhere in your property could be a very nice way to go. Give it a try.
How high off the ground would you suggest?
Whatever you've got, every bit of altitude is going to help. And the nice thing about vertical is that the angle of radiation is a lot more favorable to vertical polarization than horizontal. In the case of horizontal polarization, the signal that goes out from the antenna and grazes and hits the ground and bounces off of it experiences 180 degrees of phase reversal on bounce. Horizontal does that. Vertical does not. Vertical polarization at a grazing angle bounces off the ground and has almost no reversal. So vertical polarization 10 feet off the ground is not ideal, but it will work. 20 feet off the ground will work better. Try it, you'll like it. I think you're going to be pleasantly surprised. Try to get whatever altitude you can, but consider vertical polarization and a vertically polarized antenna. By the time the guy on DX band on 10 meters gets the signal from you and it's hit the atmosphere, the ionosphere, and the ionosphere has always got a magnetic field from the Earth next to it, and so that signal hitting ionosphere with magnetic field experiences something called Faraday rotation. The signal is going to rotate in polarization. The possibility exists that you launch a vertical signal, it goes through the ionosphere, rotates all the way through horizontal, and back vertical again by the time it gets to that guy in Texas during that band opening you're talking to him. So polarization on HF bands is a spooky subject. I mean, the polarization you launch and the polarization he gets are almost never the same. And there's 0 to 360 degrees of possibility. You see what's going on here. So even if the guy you're talking to is running a horizontally polarized Yagi in Texas, and you've got a vertically polarized dipole in Brooklyn, and you're afraid to try it, give it a try. I think there's a chance you're going to be pleasantly surprised. Back to you, Rich.
Okay. I've heard that. If someone's in Texas for the vertical, and I'm here in New York with a horizontal, doesn't mean anything. I heard that before, but I bought a dipole kit. I can't think of the name. It was an HRO I bought it from. It came with a center block where your 50-ohm coax connects to. It has two wing nuts where you connect your wire for each side and two insulators. And I made one for 6 meters. And I strung that between the two-story part of the house and my 2-meter mast. And my SWR was super high. And I asked a few questions here and there, and they told me, suggested to change location. So I ran a temporary rope from the house to the small tree in the backyard, about 30 feet high. And I swung it away from the house and away from that mast. And now that 6-meter dipole works fine on SWR-wise. But altitude is a problem. It's only about 20 feet, maybe 25 tops off the ground. And I have another building to the west of me, which is about 25 feet high. Now I'm looking in a big box over here.
Yeah, you've got a difficult situation. That's the way it's about it, Rich. Still, if you start experimenting with some of these antennas, you're going to find you're going to get out a lot better than you think. RF has got a way of sneaking around all kinds of things. For every signal you launch from your property, it's going to every other place in the universe. The only thing left to discuss is how strong is it when it gets there, and is it above threshold of the receiver the guy is using there. When the band opens, you know that a wet noodle and a watt of power is going to allow you to make a QSO. So even if you're in the worst possible box in your particular town, still in band openings you're going to make it. Sunspot cycle is going to start coming back. You're going to get some more openings on 40, 20, 15, 10. Sporadic E, later in the spring, you get some beautiful openings on 6 meters and 2 meters because of sporadic E propagation, particularly late May, beginning of June. So when that band opens on 6 meters or 10 meters, you can't build an antenna that's bad enough that you're not going to make a whole lot of QSOs with those people, and you'll have some fun. So don't be discouraged. As long as you're not investing $1 zillion on these antennas, particularly simple dipoles, the materials are fairly cheap, and even though your situation is difficult, you're going to be pleasantly surprised the way RF can get around it. It sneaks around everything, Rich. KQLIW.
Yeah,
well,
two things here. When I first got into the hobby, someone gave me advice and said a 10-watt transmitter with a good antenna would do better than a 100-watt transmitter with a poor antenna. And the other thing is, my 6-meter dipole, if I add two more wires from the center block out, with little spacers between the 6-meter and the 10-meter, so they don't short out to each other, that should work fine too, right?
Absolutely. It's called a fan. That's called a fan dipole. properly constructed, you can make a fan dipole cover 80, 40, 20, 15, 10, and 6 in one antenna. Back to you, Rich.
KB2, YEW on the group.
YEW recognized. Rich first. Go ahead, Rich.
Yeah, okay. So I can add two more wires, run for 10 meters, as long as they have space. I was going to take like a half inch PVC, 2 inches long, and drill a hole on each end, and slip the wires through there so they don't short each other. And it should work for 10 and 6. But like, the problem is height. And I actually made a 6 meter quarter wave ground plane. I put that up temporarily, and it actually worked better than the dipole for reasoning that it's about 10 to 15 feet higher up. See, I can put a vertical antenna up easier than a horizontal. That's my problem. What do you think about a loop antenna?
Well, in the case of loops, for instance, like 6 meters, halos and whatever, they work. And if you insist on horizontal polarization, that's one way to go. But there's nothing magic about the polarization when you get a band opening. A vertical dipole, a vertical monopole, a vertical ground plane, in your particular circumstance where you've got a 30-foot tree out there and you can put a pulley in it, or you can shoot a string over it with a bow and arrow or with a slingshot, you've got a little more opportunity than you know about. I'll admit it's not the best QTH in the world. But particularly during band openings on 6 and 10 meters, some pretty yucky antennas are going to work like a charm. I recommend you give it a try. KB2YEW. Start over your name, sir, and go ahead with your comment. I'm K2RIW. My name is Dick.
Yes, good evening, Dick. Name here is Guy calling out of New York. How are you doing this evening?
Pretty good. And, I presume you got a little bit of snow there in Coney Island. What would you like to talk about, Guy?
Yeah, I got a question for you. Built a pair of 8-meter 2 antennas for omnidirectional satellite wheels. On verticals, I'm shooting 0 TBI. When I switch over to my 8-meter on 2-meter uplink, even if it's at 10 watts, I'm shooting TVI. What's going on?
The TVI, is it coming from the neighbor next door, Guy?
And in my own house also, but only on some TVs, only on some computers, not all. I drove an 8-foot grounding rod in, got a massive grounding block in the shack, got all my equipment grounded, got my shield of my coax connected, grounded. I got grounds all over the place. Everything is grounded, so it's not that. I know you can never have enough of grounds, but I don't think that's the problem. SWR is extremely low. Even got an antenna tuner for the 2 meters to bring the SWR down even lower, down to almost nothing. And even on 10 watts, I'm still getting the problem. But if I switch over to vertical, I could pump it up to 100 and zero. Nothing at all comes across anything. But as soon as I switch over to my egg beater, which is basically horizontally polarized, that's the problem I'm getting. And I also get the same problem when I switch over to my 10-meter dipole. Same exact problem. 10 watts will do it.
So I'm not... As I see it, lots of people believe that grounds and grounding affect TVI. Very rarely does it. Lots of people believe that high standing wave ratio affects TVI. Very rarely does it. I believe what's being radiated by your real antenna is doing it. And much of the television service is horizontally polarized. So a lot of people are cable these days. And whether or not your cable system has good connectors. And some people will lay twin lead with thumbtacks under the rugs in their house in order to connect a whole lot of television sets. That can be radiating, and it's not a very well shielded system. Some people don't use the properly installed F connectors on the end of their cables on their power splitter, which allows them to take the cable TV into multiple places in the house. I believe it's really what's being radiated by your antenna is most likely just front-end overload, strong signal getting into the TVs and the computers and things. What is the nature of your transmitter? I have the impression that you can transmit 10 watts, you can transmit 100 watts. It sounds to me like on 2 meters you're probably running something like a Mirage 1016 or whatever. Is it that kind of an amplifier that you're turning on when you're getting the TVI, Rich, go ahead.
Negative. My name here is Guy. I'm running my TS-2000. When I pump it up a little, when I'm doing my, when I'm working the birds, I'm coming over DirecTV. Not antennas, not broadcast TV. I'm coming over DirecTV, satellite TV.
Wow. That satellite TV system you're coming over, how far away from you is it?
One of them is on my roof, and it only comes through on my big screen TV in my house. I've got a little 13-inch TV in my shack, and I get zero on that, nothing at all. But if I'm on the same antenna system, the same satellite dish system, but when I turn on the large screen TV downstairs, even at 10 watts, it's like I'm broadcasting over it. And the same thing on the neighbor's TVs.
Comment?
Go ahead, Rich.
I bet you he has a leak in the antenna collapse to that television. That's some broken shield or something. That's why it's only coming in on that television. Here's an interesting one for you. I have, upstairs, where my main equipment is, when I transmit on 10 meters, I can hear my audio coming on my television set, and it's not even on.
Yeah, because the audio on many television sets is powered continuously. Obvious by the fact that you can secure your remote control and turn the set on, you know that there's a power supply in the set turned on. And that power supply usually is running the audio as well as the infrared or radio receptor for the remote control. So turning a TV set off doesn't turn it all off. Only turns off portions of it. Only unplugging it from the wall would really turn it off. So the fact you come through the audio is easy to explain. And I agree with what Rich is saying there, Guy. Quite possibly if you do a real strong inspection of every single F connector, all of those really well installed and properly shielded and so on, is all the power splitting taking place by way of properly installed devices? Is there any open twin lead anywhere? There's even a slim possibility, if it was cable TV, that one of the connectors out front that brings the drop into your house is not a well-shielded connector. In your case, where it's DirecTV satellite, KU-band stuff, I know you're not getting into the KU-band, but the satellite converter is converting KU-band into channel 3, and so the channel 3 reception is what's doing it. In my opinion, the most TV sets they run on channel 3. And is every one of those cables and all of that system well shielded? It's going to take some experimenting of laying the cables differently, moving them around. I mean, even to have somebody key up the transmitter in one part of the house while you go to the other part of the house and move wires around is going to give you a clue. What you're describing is a electromagnetic interference problem, which on a high percentage of the time is shielding. Most likely your transmitter is clean, otherwise the one little set that you're talking about would also be getting interference. But the fact that any piece of equipment can get a clean signal suggests that your transmitter itself is clean, and that there's leakage going on in something else that's going to require some sniffing, some experimenting, and whatever. It might even be worth a try to operate a handy talkie on 2 meters near the offended set. And that way you can create the interference while wiggling the cables right there. That may give you some clues. It's going to take some work, but it's worth a trial. It's worth the effort to try to eliminate that guy.
that I could do in my house, but what could I do for the neighbors? Would a TVI filter help at all? It's worth a try. A TVI filter right at their TV set itself. It's worth a try. Let's see what Mel's got to say. Go ahead, Mel.
Okay, Jerry.
Okay, I think the better way to do it is to sniff out the cable. I had a similar situation here, and it was exactly what you said, a leaky cable. And the way to find it is to look for the leaky cable rather than try to, you know, do it by hit and miss of fooling around with connectors and all. I don't think your neighbors would like, you know, going behind their set. And something will go wrong with the TV, you're going to have problems. So better off you sniff it out and without, you know, and then make a recommendation to the neighbor if their cable is leaking or your, you know. In other words, don't touch anything, because if anything, God forbid, happens to any of these sets, guess who's going to be blamed, Dick?
I hear you. Eric, what's your suggestion, Eric?
Yeah, no, actually, I have a couple questions for him, because you're talking about direct TV, let's put it that way, okay? By the way, the converters convert from KU to L-band. It comes down L-band, goes into the receiver. It's digital, Dick, it's digital. We don't get herringbone and stuff like that. If anything, it just goes away. From what I'm hearing, I'm wondering if the guy's feeding his sets with video from the receiver, or is he distributing Channel 3 all over the place? Because that makes a big difference in terms of how things get there. The reality is that it ain't getting into the DirecTV. You know, if you've got an open shield that happens to be bringing the RF close to the set, that's one thing. If it's an old set, you know that there's twin leads between the F connector on the back of the set and the tuner. But more modern sets don't have that issue. If he's feeding it with video,